Support for this public radio podcast comes from AIG Travel Guard, providing travel insurance designed to help travelers face the unexpected. Learn more at travelguard.com.
I'm Dick Gordon. Coming up, the story of a newspaper cartoonist from Cameroon who devised his own attack on corruption. Issa Nyafaga helped start a newspaper that was more cartoons than anything else. The politicians and the bureaucrats didn't come off too well in this publication, and while Issa says he was happy to have the chance to shine a light on the flaws of the government in Cameroon, what he was really trying to do was reach the people.
I decided one day to say I would do something for people and to make them not be stupid. That's why we choose to do cartoons.
It was no surprise to Issa that the newspaper cartoons were a big hit with the people, and it was also no surprise to him to discover that the people hired as government censors in Cameroon were also paying close attention. Issa was eventually forced to move to Paris and then on to New York. I'll talk with him after the news about his people, his cartoons, and the painting he does now. Here's a little fact to think about. We all know that corruption can be a problem. Experts say it's at its worst in the developing countries in Africa, where you might be expected to pay a bribe to the police, or to a judge, or the tax collector, or a school, or a hospital administrator, or any government official. What's even worse is that it's the poor people who always have to pay. In Cameroon, a country on the west coast of Africa, 4 out of every 5 people surveyed say they routinely pay these bribes. That's twice as bad as most other offenders on the list. So Issa Nyafaga decided that he'd do his bit to inform the people. He started publishing political cartoons. He didn't actually name the officials. He didn't have to. Everyone knew who he was lampooning. Unfortunately for Issa, so did the government censors. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Story.
The Story is produced by North Carolina Public Radio, WUNC. It's co-produced and distributed by American Public Media.
Issa Nyafaga has been drawing pictures ever since he was a child. But before he thought of himself as an artist, he thought of himself as a journalist, telling stories with those pictures. And that's what got him in trouble. See, the literacy rates are so low in Cameroon. Issa helped put together a newspaper for people who couldn't read, but still needed to know about the issues. It was just one page of writing. All the other pages were pictures.
Comics. It's news, only by cartoons.
Did you get in trouble for doing this?
Not in the beginning. In the beginning it was fine and people was laughing and there was, you know, then after...
Were you a popular man? People
yes,
were going, there's
yes,
the man who does yes. the cartoons, yeah.
Yes, so after 3 years we had like 5 million people reading the newspaper. And it doesn't mean in Cameroon 5 million people buy it, no. Because you have people can buy one copy, but they're reading the family like you, like they're reading, I don't know, maybe some...
Because it gets passed from hand to
yes,
hand to
hand. Yes, hand to
hand. It's expensive.
Yes.
Right? Or people don't have a lot of money.
Yeah.
Maybe it's not so expensive.
But the pleasure for us was the message is reached to the population. That's an important thing.
So what happened then? Was it that your cartoons became more political and that got you in trouble? Or when the newspaper became popular, that's when the government sat up and paid attention to it? What was
the government pays attention by this technique called the censorship. We have to...
But how can they censor a cartoon?
They can do it. They did it. So they just put cross on it.
So
I think...
You take your newspaper.
Yes.
First
before
to the government.
Get print, 2 copies, one for the government and another one for the justice.
And whatever they draw an X through?
Yes. They say, okay, this is wrong. You didn't draw the president very well and he's don't look nice and blah, 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 blah. And you have to take it away, you know. And they just want to move this information from the newspaper.
But Issa, if they got a chance to see the newspaper before it was published,
yeah,
why would you ever get in trouble for something you put in the newspaper? Did you sometimes sneak something past the censor?
No, because it's a very, very vicious system. Because the one who in charge to do that want to take money.
The censor?
Yes.
Yeah.
And if you pay him, you're going to let the information go.
So you bribe the censor if you want to get something through?
Yes. So one day, we just decide to not go to see the censor because the information were very important, you know. So we get it printed, and when we were selling it, they shoot people, and some people died. also.
People got shot for selling this newspaper.
Yes, people got persecuted and died to selling newspaper.
Issa stayed under the radar for a while because he used a fake name, Nyaf. But his cartoons were biting, particularly those aimed at Cameroon's president, Paul Biya. For example, after a long season of drought, he drew one picture of a government spokesman talking on television.
I drew this guy in the TV saying, oh, it's raining today and we have to thank the president Biya, you know. And there was one time I went to jail. So someone came and get me and I spent like 12 days.
In jail?
Yes, in jail.
And because you drew a picture of a television announcer saying thank the president for the rain.
I didn't know even what I was there for. You know, they didn't give me paper and say, okay, we're going to stop you here because we need interrogation, we need information. They just keep me there and beat me up all the time. It was very regular thing in Cameroon for journalists.
You're listening to The Story. I'm Dick Gordon. When Issa Nyafaga was held at the police station, they demanded that he give them the names of other journalists and the names of his sources. Issa said no.
It's wrong. It's immoral. And they say,
this is a basic rule of journalism. It's the same all over the world.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because we give you an option to say the name and go back home, but you don't want to do that. So we're going to get them from innocent. So they hang me up and shock me with powers.
They hang you by your arms?
They hang my feet.
They
hang my feet.
So you're upside down.
Feet, yes. And they have this big basin of water. You know, my head was going in all the time and taking off, you know.
And they're putting electric shocks on you?
They put electric shocks. And they have, like, program. They knew what they was doing because they have a program. Today I have cafe and tomorrow I have a tea and the next day I have a decaf, you know. They have expressions like that. So
every one of these kinds of tortures has a nickname?
Yes, they have. They have.
So coffee, what's that?
Coffee is more hard. It's like they're going to shock me under my
in your armpits.
Yes. And they have all the newspaper on the wall.
They make me pull my arms just thinking about that.
They have all the newspaper on the wall, like wallpapers.
Your newspapers?
My newspapers.
Your drawings.
Most of the newspapers. Yes, most of my newspapers.
They didn't put them up there. The newspapers that they put on the wall, they're not putting them there so you will make some kind of confession. They have them on the wall because they like what you're doing, right?
Yes, yes.
How long did this torture go?
3 weeks.
How bad was that?
How bad? It was bad, like I lost a conscience many times and my family didn't know where I am and I didn't see doctor for all the time I was there. The first person who saw me was the mother of my son and she brought him and they didn't recognize me.
Why didn't they recognize you, Issa?
Because my face was looking very different, very strange. I was like
puffed up from being beaten?
I had a mask, yes. They call that mask. I have the mask. So they didn't recognize me. My mouth was falling down.
Issa Nyafaga is a cartoonist from Cameroon. He spent 6 months in jail before a chance encounter with a lawyer helped get him out. But there was a price. Issa could go free, but he was ordered to never draw a political cartoon again.
It was my payment job. How am I going to live with no job? They didn't say, okay, you're supposed to not do this for 3 years, but this is the job. You can clean up every morning here or find a job somewhere. They didn't give me a job. You know, I had a job. I have that passion. I have 5 million people waiting every morning.
So you started doing political cartoons anyway?
Back, yes. I started doing that back.
Right away? I mean, did you wait?
No, my staff and me did a meeting and start to guess what's can be a best way for me to live after all this, you know.
Yeah.
And then he said, I'm going to lose my business if I don't get you back in this business.
He says the paper will not survive without your cartoons.
Yes. So he asked me if I still want to do it. I also have this pressure from my father saying, my son, this is not journalism. You know, you should stop this.
Your father didn't want you to do this?
No, he didn't want. But I want to live my dream, so then I started doing cartoons. So that was the first thing he told me when he
did. You change your name, your pen name, your pseudonym? Were you still
after Nayef? Jail?
Yeah, after jail.
After jail, I didn't change my name.
So you started to do cartoons again?
I started to do cartoons again, and I waited for 3 months. Nothing happened. Then one day, a cop called me and said, oh, are you this guy? I said, yes, I am. And he said, I really like your cartoons. Oh, I said, thank you. And
he said, is a policeman who was saying he really likes your cartoons.
Okay. And he said, my wife also likes it. I said, okay, that's fine. And he said, I work for police office and my boss just signed something. They're going to get you again.
Oh, this guy was warning you.
Yes. So I'm calling you just to give you a few hours.
What did you do?
Because I have to ask for visa of different countries, you know, for United States Embassy, France, Italy, Canada, Japan, wherever I can go.
Okay, but it takes a long time to get a visa, yeah?
Yes, take a long time. I have to hide myself all the time.
How did you hide yourself?
People hide me, you know. In Douala, you have a house who doesn't have numbers. You know, you don't write information.
Everything is word of mouth.
Yes.
Nobody knows where to find anybody.
So I have my own agents, you know, watching the government and saying, okay, where are going to be tonight? I was like, Yasser Arafat, you know, I sleep here today, tomorrow I'll sleep somewhere.
Like yesterday.
Homeless.
But this is, it's like being in exile in your own country.
Yes.
Did you have this, I don't know, system of signals and signs and how did you know when it was safe, when you could leave your village, when you could go back to...
The sign would be like, if you put my foot in the inside of my leg, that means you can come in. If you put it upside, it's not good.
So you tuck your foot behind.
Yes. You just see the foot of the guy. Maybe it's very, very far away and he's going to show you the foot and you will know. Just like he's doing something else.
But don't the police know all these signs as well?
No, they don't.
Eventually, though, Issa Nyafaga and his family and his colleagues decided it was best for him to leave Cameroon. The trouble was that he knew his name was in the computer and that he would be caught by the airport police. The only way out was bakshish, a bribe. He got some cash and he put it in an envelope and he made a plan to meet the chief of police late in the day before his flight. Issa found the chief at a restaurant with his family.
I went there in the evening when he was going to dinner with his family and said, okay, I'm looking for you. I have the envelope for you. And he said, okay, what do I want to do? I said, okay, you have to take me, but I don't want a police check the computer. Just take me in the plane. And he take me like his son and walking with me with my bag. And he have the uniform, you know, with all the medium and stuff, you know.
He looks
was very shiny.
Pretty fancy at
yes.
this point, yeah.
And he was looking very, very patriotic.
That's a good word. Very patriotic.
Then, yeah. Yes. Then he give the
salute.
The salute to the guy, and the guy say, who's this man? He say, it's my nephew. He's going to Paris. He have a girlfriend. He's going to visit her, you know, Paris, capital of love and stuff. So he say, oh, I have an order to check everyone. He say, you don't need to check in. You want to lose your job? And the guy said, no, I don't want to lose my job. He said, but okay, leave my nephew. It's family business. Let it go. And, you know, I'm coming back to talk to you. Don't worry. Because the sign also to say, I'm coming back to talk to you. That means the guy will have something. You know,
he'll get something out of
yes,
it too.
Yes, yes. Always. That's how it works. It's bakshish all the time in Cameroon. We call that bakshish.
Yeah, yeah.
They know the words in India also.
Yeah.
Then he gave me in the plane, and the plane had some problem to take off, you know, like, and I was close to have a heart attack.
I was going
to
say, you're yes, starting
my,
to worry.
My heart was beating like boom, 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 boom. Then they say it's the time, and then we flew, and I was safe.
Issa Nyafaga left Cameroon over 10 years ago. His travels since have taken him around the world and in many directions as an artist. I'll talk with him about all that in just a moment. I'm Dick Gordon from American Public Media. This is The Story. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Story. Issa Nyafaga is a Cameroonian cartoonist who was forced to flee from his country because he was embarrassing the authorities. He moved to Paris and then on to New York as his cartooning matured into fine art. He told me that the kind of painting he's doing now is actually very closely connected to the narrative pictures he began with.
My first political pictures is when I was seven.
Seven?
Yes. They were shooting people in public space. They were shooting these people because they were protesting against oil in the country. Said that people should know where the money goes. So this picture stick in my mind.
It was corruption, really. I mean,
yes.
Cameroon
it
has all, this huge problem of corruption,
yes.
right?
Yes, it's one of, in 2000, it was the first corrupt.
One of the worst.
Yes, because you have some organization in Berlin who trying to classify good moralities right. of countries. The Cameroon was last. and we were the best.
First prize.
So, yeah, that was my first political
So you pictures. saw the people themselves being shot, or you saw the picture of
I
the
I saw
people?
The people being shot, because everyone can go there, for example.
So you went and saw the bodies on the ground?
I went there, yes. So, and you know, child never forget thing like that. So the pictures thing in my mind. So I decided one day to say I would do something for people and to make them not be stupid. That's why we choose to do cartoons.
When did you draw a picture of this? At that time?
No, because my father's Muslim. And in the Muslim family, he never been to school. But always have this idea that if you draw a picture, that means you want to make competition with God.
Huh.
So drawing
for me. So you
were
forbidden to chat.
Yes, all the time. I was punished when I was drawing pictures. Yeah. So I had to draw in the secret all the time. All my childhood, I draw like that.
Where would you draw? Would you go outside and draw?
No, I draw in my room and I keep it under the bed, you know, like that. So, and when one day my father discovered that and punished me and my brother also. So I.
What did he do to you?
To stay on one leg.
Stand on one
yes,
foot?
Yes, and one finger down for like an hour.
For an hour?
Yes. So if I put the other foot down, I have 2 hours to done the job.
So you're on one foot,
yeah.
Balancing with one finger.
Yes.
And if you touched another foot or another finger, what
it's
would happen?
One more hour. So I have
oh,
to
another
do it 2 hours.
I
yes.
see. Okay.
So, yes.
It was painful.
Yes, for my brother also. And he stopped punishing his children when my sister was born, because my father decided to stop punishing us. Because if it's girl, you have a long life. But if it's boy, it seems to be like it's the one who's going to take your place.
Huh.
So my sister was very spoiled kid.
What kind of drawings did you make as a small child?
I think I do cartoons all the time. Because I can read them now with different eyes of professional. I think it was looking like cartoon, but it was also a portrait of people or maybe sequence and sketch. You know?
So when you were drawing in secret, did you draw a picture of these dead people?
I draw a picture of these dead people, but very badly, yes. And I draw very bloody pictures because it influenced my life like for many, many, many years, yes.
Issa Nyafaga was one of many children in his family. His father had 4 wives. Issa's mother went to live in her village, and when Issa himself was 8 or 9 years old, he joined her.
We are farmers during the winter time and painter during the summer time. So during the summer time, we use different color of earth to paint them on the wall with hand.
On the walls of the houses?
On the wall of houses. Men build the houses, and women and children came with different color of earth, different color ground to paint on the wall.
What kind of pictures?
What kind of pictures? It's design. It's a square and triangle. It's prayer. It's text telling the story of the season, because we talk to the wind all the time.
I've seen some of these kinds of designs in the artwork that,
yes,
that
yes.
you do.
That's
today.
Why I'm do also. I'm mixing them with what text.
Uh-huh.
Because my father is also a calligrapher, so I don't want to provide my mother only in my work and leave my father alone. So I just mix them.
But at the time when you're doing this,
yeah.
you're a young boy and you have this colored earth all over your hands.
Yes,
yeah?
Yes, yes.
Is this what gave you the first interest in artwork, in working like this?
At that time, I'm just doing something with the kids, doing something with the mother in the village. You know, I didn't have this conscience.
Were you good at this drawing on the walls?
I have just to take pleasure doing it.
Yeah.
Because, yes, we have to do it. Because the next rain season going to take all the decoration down.
It'll wash it all
yeah.
away. Yeah.
So the next dry season, we will start again. So it's some process like traditions.
I'm Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Story. Issa Nyafaga found himself recalling these traditions in the years after he left Cameroon. He was telling me earlier that back in 1996, he left in a hurry with the police on his trail. He also told me it was quite a shock when he got off the plane in Paris.
When I got to Paris first, I remember my first 2 weeks saying hi, hello to everyone in the metro or in the bus. And people didn't answer. You know, they were saying, what's this? What is it? And one of my friends from my childhood said, don't say that to people here, because when you say that, it means you need some quarters or you need
cigarettes.
Oh,
you're a beggar. Yeah.
Yes, or you need food. You're hungry. I was very, very, very angry about myself. And I said, what I'm doing in this country, I can't live in a country where people don't say hi to each other, you know. But that was only in Paris. I wrote to my brother back to Cameroon and said, I can't live here because people don't talk to each other if they don't know each other. If they're sharing a seat in the transportation, they don't say anything to each other. They're reading a book and listen to workmans. I want to go back. And he said, are you crazy? If you're coming back here, that means we save your life for nothing. We paid to get you there for nothing. You will go back here and, you know. And I was leaving Cameroon because I want to go away for a few months.
Your brother saying to you, though, that you can't come home now.
No. Okay. Yes. It's going to be very dangerous.
What's this like for you, though? I mean, to
it was bad.
Yeah, to hear that you can't
go home.
It
hurts me. It hurt me very, very hard, you know, to say I can't go back home. And it's like I never leave Cameroon because it's like I have my head is here in West Country, but my feet still there.
When Issa talks about his feet, he might be speaking literally rather than in a metaphor. See, Issa Nyafaga paints stories on his skin. Then he moves. He'll paint one arm with hundreds of white dots while the other's ringed with narrow white stripes.
I paint my body, and then when I listen to the music, any kind of music it is, then I set up my colors, my acrylic, then I start painting emotion from the music.
I want to talk about this painting of your body. I've seen a little bit of it in a video, but
yeah.
On one arm,
mm-hmm.
Your arm is naked.
Yes.
You paint white stripes that go across the arm.
Yes.
Yeah?
Yes.
And on the other arm, lots of dots.
Yes.
But it's not just so you can see
your
arm with the paint on it. Then you start to move. It's like a dance, but it's different from a dance.
Sure. Yes, it is.
What is it?
Sometimes I have this feeling that I am home because I grew up in the village. And in my village, the party is the real party. It's 1 week, 7 days. If we do parties one night, it's appetizement. So sometimes...
You're talking about a celebration, right?
Yeah.
And would people then in your village paint themselves?
Yes, depending on during the ceremony.
Uh-huh.
But not the same design I do. Because my design is the dot is the people in the society. One dot is one person.
So you have hundreds of dots on your
yes.
arm representing
on one
hundreds
hand.
Of
And another
people.
One, the line is vibration between people. Like what's happening now, you and me? That's the vibration, the lines going over like this. Why on the hand first? Because in all the people in my village know that when you want to understand the world, you have to see the five fingers of your hand because they're always different. We can share if we're the
same. To understand the world, you have to see the five fingers
finger of
your
hand. They are different. Each finger have different skill, different personality, different. And one finger cannot carry anything, cannot hold anything. You need contribution of other fingers.
Right.
That's what is planned to every children in my village.
So tell me a little bit about the music that goes along with this painting on your body. Do you choose the music? Is it Cameroonian music?
No, it's not necessarily Cameroonian music because I am the citizen of the world. So I just want music who's very, you know, who the person expressing himself want to share with me so I can integrate that music in the part of my performance and trying to be in my work. And also like...
So you will use what? You'll use reggae music or you'll use some African music? Give me an example of the kind of music.
I can use country music, for example.
Like what?
Like, Kenny Rogers.
And will you?
Yes.
And you've done this to a Kenny Rogers song?
Yes. I've done it already. I can use it to opera. I can use it to Salif Keita music. I can use it to Richard Bona. I can use it to everyone. I can integrate everyone's music because it came from my background. You know, I can integrate a lot of things. Every day I'm dealing with myself.
You got to know when to hold them, know when to fold them. I'm Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Story. Issa Nyafaga is an artist who was forced to leave Cameroon when he got in trouble for his political cartooning. That was 12 years ago. Issa had this recurring dream of returning home. Everyone's there, overjoyed to see him. Well, for many years, it was just a dream, but then it actually happened.
I went back to Cameroon once. It wasn't officially.
You had to sneak in.
Yes. I have to change my name to go to Gabon and take a boat, go through country.
Was this dangerous?
Yes, it was very dangerous. But my parents were very, very sick, and I have to make it, you know, I have to take a risk. Then I went to my village and I arrived in the village and they took me to the shaman. You know the shaman, the pygmy. Mm-hmm. And he said, oh, the bite eyes is on you. I think we have to do something, you know.
So the shaman says that the bad eye is on
it's
you.
On you, yes. They have to protect my stars and protect me mystically. Then they sit me down. I was naked. Then they put oil on my skin. I was in the middle of cycle of candles. And they shooting me with eggs, saying a words, incantations, you know.
So you're sitting there. You're naked. You're covered in oil. They're throwing eggs at you. What are you thinking? That this is a good thing or this is crazy?
I was thinking, I turned someone different. You know what I'm saying?
I was saying that.
But I have to get back in that belief again, in that faith. You're going to realize that when you come back to your home country and see how different you are. You know what I'm saying?
How long were you back in Cameroon?
I spent 1 week.
How was it?
Oh, it was very nice.
So tell me something. If you were hiding from the police,
yeah,
and the people in your village were able to protect you.
Mm-hmm.
Once you snuck back into Cameroon, could you not have stayed if you wanted to stay? Stayed in secret using the sort of signals?
It won't make sense because I won't reach the audience I wanted.
You've got something to say.
Yes, to let the world know what's happening in Cameroon. Example, it has happened in many places in Cameroon. The companies came to my village to cut the trees. And they promise they have to build school, they have to build bridge, they have to build a little small hospital for emergency things, you know. They never do that. And then people have to protest for that, and they send them the police. They beat them up, you know. So they don't have no voice to say whatever they want to say. So I can live there, but my message won't be reached. That's why being a part of this society, I know if I go back to Cameroon, I won't be the same, but I can do project with any kind of city in the United States, with people on my village or people in another village somewhere else. Because you know what's weird is in my village, people think that white people are dirty. I say, why? Because they say they have bathroom in the house. So this example to show you how far away the culture are. You know what I'm saying?
So what do you do? Do you explain that it's actually...
I am the ambassador. I have to explain that we have a system of irrigation in the house taking all this far away.
So you can have a bathroom in the house, but you're not leaving all the dirt in the house, right?
Yeah, because we in the villa, we don't have a bathroom in the house. We have it in the bush. So I have to explain. This is example how culture are very far away from one another.
You call it an ambassador, but in many ways you are the same political cartoonist that you were years ago, but you do it as an artist, as a journalist.
Yes.
Now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You use pictures.
It's a media. Yes.
To tell stories.
Yes, I use pictures to tell story, and my cartoons are not funny now at all because the cartoons I'm doing now, if you see them, they are very, very political. And
what?
Very critical.
How would you describe the ones that you're doing now? Give me an example of one.
The one I'm doing now is to show people how the society can be, like how a guy can say, "I'm going to some country to search weapons and never find weapons."
Sounds familiar.
You know, and never excuse himself, say I was wrong. It's not funny because people dying every day. So I think we should realize that when we make decisions, it's going to hurt a lot of family and for many years.
So the cartoon that you draw today.
Yeah.
The picture that you draw today, the artwork that you do, it has a number of different names, I realize that. Is it for the people back home in Cameroon or is it for everybody?
It's for everybody because it depends, you know. They can see me and say, okay, this guy survived from the torture and jail. Why did he keep in liking people? With the gun, you can do very fast. You know, you can go in the bus and kill 5,000 people and media will listen and say, okay, now what do you do about Cameroon? This happened, this, you know? So you have to, you know, you have to make valiant on yourself to do what I'm doing.
You have to, repeat this word for me, you have to make what on yourself?
It's expression in French, say, je dois me faire violence.
I have to hurt myself.
I have to hurt myself to be who I am today. You know, like somebody's telling you, like in Paris, somebody's taking something about you and you can't reply. because you have to keep it. You have to make violent for yourself and say, okay, I will keep this time. And I won't, he should not come up now. You know, I'm just going to keep it, you know, and go to my studio and do some home, some work for myself. That's what I'm doing, you know. All my violence is in my work. So I don't think I can hurt anybody physically with my cartoons.
You're a peaceful man.
Thank you. Thank you. I am very proud to be here and talk about this.
Thank you for coming to the studio.
My pleasure. My pleasure.
Issa Nyafaga's work will appear in an upcoming show in New York about cartoons as a form of activism. And you can read more about that as well as find links to Issa's art on our website at thestory.org. If you go there, you'll also see pictures of Issa's body painting that we were talking about earlier and see some of the cartoons that got him in trouble. The music we're listening to is that of the Cameroonian musician Manu Dibango, specialist in Mkosa music. If you have any suggestions of stories like Issa's that somehow give us some insight into a part of the world and circumstances that we're all interested in learning about, well, get in touch with me. Lots of ways to find me with little contact buttons on our website at thestory.org. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Story. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Story. You may have noticed that you're not hearing a lot about the primaries here on The Story. Let me tell you why. To begin with, I have the impression that all the other radio programs are giving me more than enough daily news about the people who are in and out and doing well and doing badly. The other thing is, though, that real storytelling takes kind of a beating in politics. Stories get used and invented and bent and exploited not with the purpose to enlighten or delight or engage us, but so someone can get elected. It gets a little murky. However, I recently got a note from Adam Trotter, who told me that he was, and I'm quoting him here, thinking back on the contentious presidential elections of 2004, and especially 2000, and I was brought back to an experiment in democracy that my fourth grade teacher conducted during the 1980 elections. Adam got me thinking back to 1980.
When I became governor of California, we solved many of the same problems America faces today. We did it once, we can do it again.
The time is now for strong leadership. Reagan for president.
It's good for the nation's security when the commander-in-chief is himself an experienced military man. Jimmy Carter, Annapolis graduate, is just that.
In that troubled region of the world, vital to all nations on earth.
Jimmy Carter, a military man and a man of peace.
Let me get back to Adam Trotter's story. In September of that year, he was entering fourth grade. His teacher was Mrs. Olin. She decided to have her 8-year-olds track the election. In fact, they would play out their version of the contest between Carter and Reagan. Adam was chosen to be President Carter, and his best friend Chris was selected to campaign as the Republican candidate, Ronald Reagan. Here's Adam.
I actually liked that because at the time I liked Carter.
And you were already president.
I was already president, right? Exactly. That seemed to give me an advantage. And that's how we campaigned, not with our own names, but with their names. And
how did you split the classroom up? I mean, was every kid's desk a different state? How did you do that?
The classroom had already been split up from the beginning into groups of maybe five students apiece. I believe there were five tables. We called them families, but they became states.
Let me guess. Yours was Georgia.
Mine was Georgia, and Chris's was California. And from the very beginning, I felt at a disadvantage because it was pretty clear from the beginning that our own tables were going to vote for us.
Chris was going to get all the Electoral College votes for California.
Right.
He was going to be well ahead of you
right,
just by winning over 40, the people 45, who
45 votes for him automatically, 12 votes for me automatically.
And the fight was on for
the fight was
the
on.
Elements.
We started by making posters, and one of the things that we really latched on to as a campaign tool was the image of the elephant and the donkey.
You were what? Eight years old. The animals were
right.
Easy.
So the animals were it was easy. So there were lots of elephants, lots of donkeys all over the place, and I began to feel very sympathetic for the poor donkey. It seemed to me like an underdog kind of animal compared to an elephant who's going to run all over the competition and trample it down. And this one poster I drew myself had sort of a full frontal view of the donkey's face, and I tried to make it as cute and as appealing as possible. A little bit of droopy ears, you know, sort of sad eyes. I remember drawing an arrow pointing to the donkey, and it says, "Vote for him, please." So I was really trying
sort
to appeal
what Carter
to,
was doing.
to the cute factor of the Democratic Party.
Take me to the kind of emotional side of it. Did Chris kind of go through this in an academic way, or did it become personal? Did it ever feel real?
It felt entirely real. Chris and I stopped hanging out together.
You'd been best friends before.
Right.
And now you weren't talking.
Or if we were talking, it was kind of strained, kind of formal. We were trying to act like adults, trying to act like presidential candidates. And by the end, I really not so much felt hostile towards him as I felt alienated from him. We steered clear of negative politics as much as possible. I don't think we were allowed to do smear campaigns.
But it was a pretty negative campaign in reality.
Yes.
You know, I mean, the Republicans said Carter was not fit to run the country, and the
right.
Democrats were saying that Reagan wasn't intellectually fit to be president. That's how nasty things got. Some of that must have spilled over a little bit on.
That was filtering in. I definitely had a sense that Carter was an underdog. I was definitely aware that I was fighting an uphill battle against a charismatic, and my friend Chris was very charismatic outsider who was sort of coming in out of the blue and trying to sweep away my administration.
Did you guys get to a debate at all, Adam?
We didn't have a debate so much as a final stump speech. Entire class was there, obviously. All of our parents were there, and most important, the news media were there.
You mean the real news media?
Yes. And we both had to get up and give our speeches, and I gave mine first.
How nervous were you?
I was very nervous, and that really surprised me because I had always been I was always a very confident kid in school. I felt smart. I felt articulate. I never had trouble giving book reports or anything like that. But suddenly, especially with a camera flashing every now and then, I almost froze up.
Who'd written your speech?
I wrote it myself.
Was it a good one?
No. It was not a very good one. Yeah, every time I've read it, my face kind of burns to remember how unprepared and unorganized I was. I talked about the Iran hostage crisis. I talked about the price of gasoline. I believe my final point to hammer home was that I was going to somehow get the car companies to increase fuel efficiency. But I wrote it entirely myself, and it sounded like an eight-year-old speech.
How about Chris's speech?
And Chris came up next, and I was already feeling ashamed of my performance and shaky and almost a little tearful. And he rattled off a speech that blew me away. He was obviously well rehearsed. He was talking about things that I didn't understand, about politics, about foreign policy, about economics.
You think he wrote this speech?
I don't think he did. I think he got some help. I can't prove that, but my impression and the impression of my parents and some of the other people who I talked to afterwards was that he had gotten some help on that speech.
There was a debate in 1980 that a lot of people say was very important in that campaign, and Reagan, being the polished former actor that he was, looked better on stage than Carter, and I think he had some good telling lines. It sounds like you guys were really kind of mirroring what was going on the national stage.
I believe we were, even if we weren't trying to.
You're listening to The Story. I'm Dick Gordon. Adam Trotter was in fourth grade back in 1980. His class was following the presidential election campaign in that year in a role-playing fashion. Adam was President Carter. His friend Chris was Reagan. And the class was divided into states, each with its share of electoral college votes. Finally, it was voting day.
It was a secret ballot, and our teacher got up in front of the chalkboard and put up the results for California, obviously. 45 electoral votes to Chris, to Reagan. Then Georgia, 12 votes to Adam, to Carter. And then she went to Texas, and there was sort of a tension and a pause. And she called Texas for Reagan. And my heart sank. And all of my people at my table kind of looked at me, and I looked back at them, and I remember the teacher saying very vividly, "Well, I think we all know what this means, but let's go on." And she tallied the rest of the votes, and I don't remember how the other two states split, honestly.
But you knew you'd lost at that time.
I knew I'd lost, and it was very hard not to cry. It had become so very personal. I almost felt like I was representing Jimmy Carter, and that I had let him down. If that makes sense. That sounds kind of grand for a fourth grader, but that's how it felt.
But I was going to ask you what the lesson of the exercise was, and I think you just answered. I mean, to get a bunch of fourth graders that engaged in something as complicated as a presidential election, when you think about it, that was quite an artful thing that your teacher did.
Absolutely, and I really praise her for it. And after she had tallied the electoral votes and announced the winner, she stopped and said, "Well, here's an interesting thing." And she wrote down the popular votes, the total popular votes. Carter got 11, Reagan got 10.
You won the popular vote.
I won the popular vote.
Echoes of 2000.
Exactly. So it gave me some consolation, some personal pride that one more person liked me than the other. And you know, of course, the votes themselves were probably ultimately a popularity contest, but the official result was that I lost, and that really stuck with me, and it struck me as extremely unfair that I got more votes, but I lost.
Adam Trotter, as the fourth grade stand-in for Jimmy Carter, now had to figure out what his childhood relationship would be with his friend Chris.
We became friends again, but not quite as good as before. There was now something kind of between us, and even much later in the year, we still behaved somewhat as an ex-president and a current president, and I moved away from that town at the end of that year, and funny enough, we both were at a computer camp a couple of years later, and at the final award ceremony, an award came up for most creative software, and the announcer said, "This is a very unusual situation, but we have a tie." And sure enough,
you and Chris
and I tied for most creative software.
Was there any sweet revenge in that for you?
I suppose so. I certainly was thinking about our presidential competition when we were standing up there receiving the awards. On the other hand, we were tied. I didn't win.
You never could beat that guy.
Never could quite beat him.
I'm interested in having you look back for us, though, Adam, at the lasting effect of that fourth grade exercise.
When any election happens, especially a presidential election, I watch very closely, almost obsessively, at the returns to see how the states are going to go. Especially in the past 8 years, the division of the country into red and blue states, I really feel a personal connection to this division, to this winner-take-all.
You realize it's all your fault.
Right.
If you beat Reagan in 1980,
right.
the whole political map would be different. Adam, thanks a lot for coming in.
It's been my pleasure.
And as it turns out, 28 years after that election, Adam Trotter's fourth grade teacher, Jean Olin, is still teaching. She's now at Sand Hills Farm Life Elementary School.
Good morning, Mrs. Olin speaking.
Hi, Mrs. Olin. It's Dick Gordon calling from The Story.
Hi. I understood you were going to call me today.
Have I caught you at a bad time?
No, this is absolutely a good time.
Do you remember these two students you'd chosen as candidates, Adam and Chris?
Well, you realize I have taught hundreds of children through the years, but I do remember those two children, yes. They were both very bright students. The fact that they both showed leadership qualities early on, and I knew this was a role-playing, and you know, you have to make sure that you get children that understand that and will do their best and yet not be totally disappointed over the outcome, not take it personally. And that's what I remember about them.
Adam was telling me, Jean, that he felt kind of clumsy in making his speech in his campaign, and he was jealous of Chris, who he thought was a whole lot slicker than him. Is that the way you remember it?
I wouldn't have remembered him like that. I think Adam was a quieter child than Chris, but no, they were both equally eloquent in their speaking, and they were just awesome children. It was an opportunity to teach both of those boys.
You know what struck me about his story, though, Jean, was just how much it meant to him. He's talking about something that happened a long time ago in his life, and yet it, in many ways, shaped his understanding of politics in ways I never would have imagined. Did you think of that at the time when you were setting all this up?
Absolutely. I wanted him to learn about the political system in the United States. And as it turned out, it was an example of one child winning the popular vote and another getting all the electoral college votes that we set up in the classroom. But I was absolutely surprised when I got a phone call from a child I taught that many years ago.
Surprised that it still stayed with him to the extent that it had.
So it
was a fascinating lesson for him in having won the popular vote but losing the election. He was heartbroken by this, Jean.
Well, you know, that's what I want, is to make an impact, a positive impact on children. That's why I'm here. In fact, it was a third grade teacher that I totally admired that is the reason that I chose teaching as a career. I wanted to grow up and be just like her.
You see, you pass it along. What struck me about his story, I think, Jean, more than anything else, was how he actually came to kind of embody Jimmy Carter, and he felt that Chris was embodying Ronald Reagan, and the campaign became personal, not in a nasty way, but in a way where everybody seemed to get drawn into it. That's what I found so interesting, and I'm not sure how you managed to do that with those kids.
I knew that they would tune into what was going on in the news, and apparently I knew those two fellows fairly well back then because that's what they did. But I would have never imagined that he aligned himself with Jimmy Carter that much.
Well, I think it's a great lesson in civics, and I like listening to his story, and it's been fun chatting with you as well. Thanks, Jean.
Thank you.
And in September of this year, once the candidates are chosen and the election is underway properly, Jean Olin plans to get a new class role-playing for this election. Adam Trotter is too old to take part. He now works as an astronomer. And so there's one example of a way that this program, The Story, can explore politics through you, through your stories, not through the stuff that we might read on a campaign poster. So if you have a story about an unexpected lesson you learned, like Adam's, let me know. You can find me at our website, thestory.org, or just leave me a message on our toll-free telephone line at 1-888-966-9862. And as it is the end of our programming week here, a chance for me to tell you about the people who helped put the program together this week. The story is produced by Corey Princell, Denise Schreiner, and Anita Woodley. Our researcher is Jeanette Arrowwood. Rachel McCarthy, Nick Vidinsky, and Ryan White all work as our audio editors. Peter Bombar and Al Wodarski are our engineers. Special thanks this week to Keith Weston for helping us with music for our program we did on Monday about Martin Luther King. The story's managing editor and director is Carol Jackson. The senior producer of the story is Greg Kelly. And just in case you don't have our mailing address, it's The Story, 120 Friday Center Drive, Chapel Hill, North Carolina. The zip code is 27517. That's The Story, 120 Friday Center Drive, Chapel Hill, North Carolina, 27517. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Story.
The Story is a production of North Carolina Public Radio, WUNC, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill.
American Public Media.